2022. It's 5 p.m. Welcome to the City of Miami public hearing for the annual action plan for fiscal year 22. This fiscal year runs from October 1st, 22 to September 30th, 23. Today we have the pleasure to have in attendance Ms. Sandy Lila, who is a contract compliance analyst for us. Just a few minutes before, we had the other city staff who assisted us in setting up and providing with all the material on the table for your review. Today's agenda includes an introduction to the annual plan and the public participation process and some of its requirements. We will proceed to give you a brief explanation of the four entitlement programs the city administers with federal dollars, which we receive from the U.S. Department of Housing and Community Development. These programs are Community Development Block Grant, or CDBG, Home Partnership, Home Investment Partnership Program, or Home Emergency Solutions Grant, ESG, Housing Opportunities for Persons with AIDS, HOPWA. And after the presentation, we will open the floor to listen to your comments, if you have any, answer any questions you may have related to the annual action plan. And we will open the floor to those who are, ready to provide comments as well as look at the online comment form that we have had available and open for the past at least 48 hours. And if we receive any comments through the online form, I will be advised of so, and I will read those comments during the meeting. And again, this is if you have not had the opportunity to provide or use the online form. The online form is in that address. If you do not feel like speaking today, for whatever reason, you can just submit your comments through the online form. Just wanted to let you know that this is not the last opportunity to provide comments. This is just an opportunity to provide comments, live comments on a public hearing. After this public hearing, once we receive most comments of everybody, we will be drafting an annual action plan, and that action plan will also be available for review, and you'll have 30 days to review and provide comments. Now we'll begin with introduction of the annual action plan. Under 24 CFR 91, the City of Miami is required to submit on an annual basis, which is around August 15th, a action plan to HUD in order to remain eligible to receive federal funding and to apply for federal assistance under CDBG, ESG, HOME, and HOPWA. The action plan presents housing and community development issues in the City of Miami and includes an analysis of an inventory of community assets and services, proposed funding to be utilized to respond to community concerns, and provides goals with objectives to address community priorities. The annual action plan serves the following functions. It's a planning document for the city. It's an application for federal funds under HUD's formula grant programs. It's a roadmap to follow in carrying out HUD fund programs and activities. And last but not least, it is a plan that provides a basis for assessing performance, which is done at the end of the year with the drafting of the CAPER, or Consolidated Annual Performance and Evaluation Report. The purpose of this meeting is to include citizen participation in the planning process for developing the annual action plan. Therefore, we're interested in hearing suggestions from you, our residents, as to the areas in which the city should place priorities when allocating next year's federal monies. On a yearly basis, the city, through the Department of Housing and Community Development, encourages representation of residents, including minorities, non-English speakers, and persons with disabilities. These meetings are designed to involve all residents, but federal programs mainly assist low and moderate income households, especially those who reside in communities where CDBG is being utilized. We hope to receive comments, views, and suggestions from residents so we can enhance the services provided with these funds, and if needed, refocus our attention to services that are most needed according to your input. Now moving into the description of the individual programs, we'll start with Community Development Block Grant. The CDBG program was established by Congress with the Community Development Act of 1974. It is the funding source with the most flexibility, and it is utilized to provide social service, economic development, street and park improvements, housing rehab, assistance, among other activities. the Code of Federal Regulations mandates that no more than 15% of CDBG funds can be utilized for the provision of public services such as elderly meals or child care programs. As mentioned before, CDBG can also be utilized to fund economic development activities such as technical assistance to for-profit businesses, certain housing activities such as single-family rehabilitation programs. However, CDBG funds have restrictions as well, and it requires the city to meet one of three national objectives, including services to low and moderate income residents. Unfortunately, the amount of CDBG the city receives experienced a downward trend some years ago, and recently has remained at a stable level at around $5 million. The next slide will show you a visual comparison of this trend. As today, we have yet to be notified by HUD of the amount of CDBG the city will be receiving in fiscal year 2022. As you can see here in the chart, there's a slight increase from what was received in fiscal year 2020. However, it is a far cry from the amount the city was receiving in fiscal year 2002, when it got close to $13 million. So the city's challenge has always been how to maintain the quality and quantity of services with less funding. With that in mind, the city has been supporting the provision of public services with social service gap funds, which is a general fund account to cover some of the dollars we have lost through time. In fiscal year 21, the city funded elderly meal programs, youth childcare programs, programs for persons with disability, parks and public facility improvements, to name some of the services. In fiscal year 2020 was a rather difficult year due to COVID-19, and the city was able to take advantage of certain CARES Act waivers that allow the usage of CDBG funds beyond the 15% limit for activities that help the city prepare, prevent, and respond to COVID-19. The home program is used to maintain and create affordable housing opportunities for low and moderate income residents. Some of the type of housing programs the city funds relate to acquisition, rehab, new construction, financing of home buyer, and rental programs. The department utilizes home funding to leverage other public and private resources to expand the reach of the dollars the city receives from the federal government. As a bonus to the program, 15% of home funds are reserved yearly to CHOTOs, or community housing development organizations, in an effort to expand the capacity of non-for-profit housing providers. As of today, for fiscal year 2022, the city has yet to be notified as the exact amount we will be receiving for this program. Through the years, we have seen the home funding decrease. In recent years, it has remained somewhat constant and steady. It is not just for inflation or variations in the housing market, which is in true dollars. Allocations are not keeping up with the upward market adjustments, which makes housing less affordable.
May I ask a question before the end?
Sure.
Is every city in the nation, is this decrease happening in every city?
Well, in the case of the whole program, the answer will be yes. The decrease or increase is directly related to how much money Congress allocates to the program in general, right? So if there's no additional dollars allocated for this specific program, then certainly everybody receives sort of the same. The formula has not changed on the formula how they utilize to calculate the amounts that goes to each municipality. Now, the only variance there will be that, you know, through the years, additional municipalities apply for home dollars. So while you started perhaps with 500 municipalities, just to give you an example, today you might have 550. So right there, you just lost 10%, right?
Okay.
Everything standing or remaining equal. So
So there are no particular problems endemic to Miami itself that's causing us to receive less. It's
right.
A general situation.
It's just a general statistic.
Okay.
I just have a question.
Yes.
I heard you mention, if you go back a little bit, about monies for programs for persons with disability. Could you just give an example of what type of programs there are?
We'll go there. We'll get there.
More specifically?
We will get there. Oh, well, with CDBG, we fund the developmental disabilities, right? And Helena can explain.
Is that the only one you have?
Yep. Right now, yes.
That's the Project Search program as well
No.
with the City of Miami?
No. We only, under CDBG, we only fund the Association for the Development of the Exception.
Is there any particular reason why there's only one?
No, there's no particular reason. You know that 15% of CDBG is very little money. So different districts have different priorities. And the districts, in general, will mandate where they want to allocate their dollars.
So am I to assume that you're saying that in this process is not competitive? The city decides who gets the funding. It's not competitive at all?
No, it's not. Fair to assume that because we do have a request for proposal process. So you have to apply through that process to be put into consideration whether or not your program could be recommended for funding.
Whether it could be.
Yeah, but let me continue and then we can discuss this at the end of the presentation. Okay. The Emergency Solutions Grant Program was designed to assist the homeless population by providing basic shelter and essential supportive services, among other things. The City of Miami, through its homeless programs, provides referral services for homeless persons to access Miami-Dade County Homeless Trust programs. The Department of Housing and Community Development provides funding on a yearly basis to street outreach activities, motel vouchers, and also has been partnering with Citrus Health Network and Camilla's House to provide rental assistance to homeless or about to become homeless individuals and households. As of today, the city has yet to be notified as to the exact amount it will receive for these programs. In fiscal year 21, the city received $475,732, and it is expecting to receive a similar amount in fiscal year 2022. The Housing Opportunities for Persons with AIDS, or HOPA program, provides affordable housing opportunities and supportive services to low and moderate income individuals living with HIV or AIDS. This is a countywide program, and the City of Miami serves as the administrator of this grant fund since it's the largest city in Miami-Dade County. The goal of the program is to provide affordable housing options to eligible persons with HIV/AIDS in order for them to concentrate on their care and treatment, thereby diminishing and in some cases eliminating the rate of transmittal of the disease. As part of the annual action plan process, a separate public hearing was previously held specifically for this program. Unlike the programs discussed earlier, the HOPA program funding has been steady for the past few years. The federal government has recognized that through proper funding of this program, it is possible to reduce the rate of transmission of HIV and AIDS and hopefully end the epidemic. This year, the HOPA program received $11,924,914. Since fiscal year 2021 is not over yet, as it ends in September 30, 2022, the following are some of the accomplishments we reported to HUD in December of last year. Under the public service category, the city assisted 897 elderly residents who received balanced and nutritional meals, and 373 households that received youth and/or childcare assistance. Under the affordable housing category, we served two households with forgivable loans of up to $70,000 to bring their homes back to code, allowing these households to live in safe and sanitary living environments. We also assisted eight households obtain forgivable loans for purchasing their first home and provided long-term tenant-based rental assistance to over 907 households. In addition, the department assisted over 1,290 households remain housed or look for additional housing opportunities through our rapid rehousing and homelessness prevention programs that have as its main goal to assist individuals and families avoid homelessness. Continuing with affordable housing initiatives, the Department of Housing and Community Development has invested in recent years about $42 million for the construction and or rehab of multifamily buildings that are expected to yield approximately 2,563 affordable units in the City of Miami. That is roughly an investment of $16,410 per unit, and the rest of the cost being covered by non-city public and private investment. The table in your screen shows five current projects in different stages of construction and another eight projects undergoing contract negotiations. The Coronavirus Aid Relief and Economic Security Act, or CARES Act, was approved by Congress and signed into law on March 27, 2020, to assist communities combat the economic effects of COVID-19. According to the Treasury Department, the act was designed to provide fast and direct economic assistance for American workers and families, small businesses, and to preserve jobs for American industries. The city was awarded ESG CV, and HAPA CV funds, which are currently being utilized to alleviate immediate needs from households and businesses. Utilizing the county treasury funds, the city created the Business Assistance Grant Program, where it was able to assist 124 small businesses with up to $20,000 of assistance per business. The total amount granted by this program was $1,928,299. With CDBG CV funds, we implemented a business continuity microenterprise program to assist businesses with less than 5 employees and in which the owner of the business is a low moderate income person. The amount of assistance was up to $10,000 per business, and the city was able to assist 40 business owners. The city also provided emergency loans to 29 small businesses so they could retain jobs for low to moderate income employees. The city provided these businesses with a loan of up to $20,000, which was forgiven if the business succeeded in retaining a low to moderate income job for at least 12 months. The department is also currently in the process of qualifying households for the Emergency Rental Assistance Program that provides up to $24,000 of assistance for rental and utility costs. This is for families that were affected by COVID-19. Utilizing ESG CV funds, we are currently funding rapid rehousing and homelessness prevention programs through Citrus Health Network and Camilla's House that allow for people that are homeless or about to become homeless to remain housed. With HAPO CV funds, the city implemented a short-term rental mortgage and utility programs that assisted people with HIV/AIDS on a temporary basis with their housing and utility cost needs. In addition, we placed additional funds into our HAPO long-term rental program to be able to reach to additional waitlist clients and provide them with housing assistance. Well, now it is your turn to assist the City of Miami plan for the future by providing us with your input and comments regarding the utilization of federal funds for the programs described. If for any reason you were not able to provide comments today in this public hearing, you'll have another opportunity to provide written comments once the draft annual action plan is released. You will have 30 days in which to submit additional comments as required by our citizen participation plan. We're planning to release the draft annual action plan in the next few weeks, so please visit us at www.miamigov.com/community-development for instructions on how to obtain a copy of the draft plan and how to submit written comments. Okay, so now we have arrived to the portion of this hearing where we hear your comments and answer any questions you may have related to the annual action plan. So before you state, if you want to provide comments, before you state your comment, please state your name, your address. If you represent a company or an agency, please state the name of your agency, and then please proceed with your comment. So, yes.
Madam Holmes, our Homes Business and Property Services Wave of Women Project, also called Loma Miami Project. Just a history, I'm just curious, in order to for me to determine what's appropriate in the process, I need to know how is the process. There's an established process, I assume. Are these funds all under the requirement of competitiveness, or are they actually, or are they targeting any specific neighborhoods or communities when they come, or is it for everyone in general?
No, this program are generally for, you know, services to be provided any neighborhood in the City of Miami. Right, there is a competitive process, and as a matter of fact, we're going to have a competitive process starting most likely this coming January, February. So we're going to have a request for a proposal process. It is done online. There is an application we've been using for the past maybe 8 years, which is called LaserFish. Zoom grants. See, everybody knows you. I was thinking the last online service. It's Zoom grants, right? And then we advertise the availability of the funds. We advertise the availability of the programs for which you can apply for. Then you go to Zoom grant, you create your account. You answer the questions that are being asked in the application, provide backup documentation. Mm-hmm. That's the application. Once we receive the applications from everybody has the same opportunity to apply. It has a closing date. The system actually closes it. It's not up to us. It just says, you know, by this day, by this time, the system will just shut down. And based on the number of applications we receive, we review all of them. And whichever applications actually meet the minimum criteria, which is a point scale, and if they meet the minimum criteria, then they will be placed on a list, right? This list is provided to the city commissioners so that they can, you know, look at the services that are being provided or applied for in their specific districts. Each district has its own priority, and they're the ones who will tell us, okay, yeah, I want to support elderly feeding. I want to support childcare. These are, and because the applications are all divided into categories, right? If you are an agency that provide elderly services, this is the category where you are. This is the district that you say you're going to serve. And all this information is given to the commissioners, so which they have their own priorities, and they will say, okay, this is the type of service that I want to provide in my district. Now, what is the problem with all this, right? Everybody knows that is lack of funding. So we can only dedicate 15% of CDBG. So if we receive an average of $5 million every year, 15% of $5 million is like $750,000, right? So that is for the whole city.
I'm sorry, does that include the city's administrative fee over the grant?
No.
So the city doesn't take any money out for administrative fees?
From there, no. Not for that 15%. That is solely for public services.
No. I'm just talking about you. I appreciate the 15%. So that means the other 85%, that still remains competitive. But does the city take out the total amount a fee
We take a percentage that is allowed by regulation. It's 20%.
I'm just curious. It's 20%.
20% of the total grant.
Amount.
Yes, that's the maximum amount that we can take. And then the rest, it goes to economic development. It could go to housing activities, capital, public facilities improvements, you know, that kind of thing.
So CDBG can be used for public facilities?
It can be used for public facilities. Yes. So all those things, you know, are decided in conjunction. Whoever applies, right? You can apply for public facilities. We review your application. If everything meets the minimum point criteria, you're placed in a list. Right, and that list is shared with the commissioner's office, and the commissioner's office is going to say, okay, this is where I want to allocate my portion of the funds, right? Because every commissioner gets an allocation. Not every commissioner gets the same. For instance, in this district, District 5,
it's per capita.
It gets more than any, like, you know, you compare District 5 with District 2, District 2 probably gets half of what District 5 gets.
And that's because...
That's because of the poverty levels. That's because of, you know, the type of neighborhoods. So it's a formula that HUD uses, including poverty, including overcrowding. So, you know, that type of formula.
But all those require public notice, though, again, right?
No,
it doesn't.
Okay,
thank you.
Yes, your name, your name.
My name is Ken Kilpatrick, Executive Director of the Alternative Programs. We own property 151 60th Street, Northwest. I had a question about recapture CDBG dollars, i.e., housing and commercial loan committee, for example. When you have the housing and commercial loan committee meetings and they recapture CDBG dollars, home dollars, ESG dollars, whatever that, under their purview, what happens to those dollars? Because in the 2020 paper, the CDBG report does not create a line item for recaptured CDBG dollars. So, also in 2020, the CAPER said that you rolled over $9 million reserves. So, if you rolled over $9 million from the 2020 CAPER, how can your available CDBG availability be 4.7.
The available is still the same, what we receive for this fiscal year, right?
I'm talking about the rollover.
Let me get to that point. So there's a story for everything, right? So a story starts somewhere and it ends somewhere. So let me explain first how all this happens, right? Every year you get a set allocation, which is around $4.5 to $5 billion, right? These dollars are divided into different, you know, because like I explained, into commissioners. Commission officers get X amount of dollars, right? The end of the day, what gets out first is public services. Public services goes out first because everybody has to start with services starting October 1st, right? We don't want to have any delays. We don't want to have any, you know, months where the agency doesn't have the dollars to be able to continue providing services, because that's very important. Then the rest is divided in the other categories that I mentioned. It could be housing, it could be economic development, it could be many other things, right? Now you mentioned housing and community and commercial loan committee.
Right.
Most of the dollars that are CDBG don't go through housing commercial loan committee, because we have very few, because of the regulations, we got very few projects and programs that can be allocated for housing construction.
Understood. I'm asking, where are those dollars?
Where did the guy mean?
What happens is, and yeah, and I have two questions. So what happens is, nonprofits like mine go before housing and loan committee, housing commercial loan committee, and we get hung over the rails by the city attorney.
Good evening, everyone.
Give up $200,000. Come on now. $200,000 from a little nonprofit like ours, we want to know where the money's going.
You're talking about, do you have a project and somebody
had a project,
defunded?
The project didn't work out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're a nonprofit. We serviced in the past 2.5 years 1,400 city residents. And we don't get a dime from the city of Miami. And because some money didn't work out, because something didn't work out, which is part of the city's fault, the Housing and Commercial Loan Committee made us pay $200,000 to get rid of a covenant that was no longer enforceable.
Well,
they hung it over. So my question is, and I don't want to bring that question to you, I just want to know where those CDBG
dollars go. Those CDBG dollars go back.
Yeah, where those dollars go?
I understood now what you're saying, right?
Right.
Those CDBG dollars in your scenario, for instance, will go back to the CDBG pot, right? When you say, oh, there was a rollover. Yeah, there is rollover. You know why there's rollover? Because a lot of the economic development projects, they don't spend all the money immediately. A lot of the housing-related projects, they don't spend the dollars every year.
But that's an orange. To that point, mm-hmm. I was asking, why isn't the surplus listed in the annual action plan? That's what I'm
the surplus, say. It is listed, because there is in the annual action plan, there is a section that tells you, tell me your funding for this year, right?
Right.
It tells you, not there, that's not the action plan. We haven't drafted the action plan yet.
Mm-hmm.
So once you see the action plan, you'll see the table.
So this is not the proposed CDBG for the action plan? Proposed, no?
Well, here there's really, this is really a historical review of the program. There's nothing proposed here yet.
There's nothing proposed.
Nothing proposed. Because thankfully, like I said in the presentation, HUD has not notified us yet how much money they're going to give us. I still don't know how much money HUD is going to give us for any of these projects. We're just going based by what we have historically received, right? But we have not received any notice recently of how much they're planning to give us. So technically, this whole action plan process that we're doing right now is, we're doing it because we know that we're going to receive money, but we cannot apply until they tell us how much money we're going to receive. So I cannot present, or I cannot create or draft a document called the annual action plan until they tell me how much they're gonna be giving us, right? And usually, they're pretty good at it, right? Like by this time, we should already know.
Right. But you guys have applied already for the
We don't have to apply. It's called entitlement.
Okay, so
it's, so the money comes to us. We do have to apply. Let me just correct that statement. Mm-hmm. We do have to apply, mm-hmm. but it's a guarantee that they're going to give it to us. It's a formality, right? It's not like we have to make an application and see if we're going to qualify. No. They already tell us, you are entitled to X amount of dollars. I have to submit an application for those like, X amount of dollars.
So does this process tie into the use of the dollars?
This process is tied to what the community feels and believes is the better use of the dollars, right?
Right.
That's technically what it is.
So and the card, yes. The money is the most, right?
And your comments, you know, will be placed in the action plan. You know? So
for the record, I'd like to know how the Housing and Commercial Loan Committee funds, the recapture funds, CDBG home, whatever else they recapture, I want to know how they're used. And I'd like to know how they've been used for the past 10 years.
Well, that is a very specific question. If you want to know exactly how it's been used, you're probably going to have to put a public records request.
Wow.
You know, it's always the answer is always there. It's just that it's not for this venue. You see, that's very specific to something.
Well, why is it not for
this venue? What I can tell you is any money that is rolled over, any money that is recaptured, is invested back in the community.
Well, my point being that if CDBG dollars are involved, right? And they're recapturing dollars from little people, right? All year, for years. Just want to know where the money's going.
No, so, I wouldn't say that.
I would.
But I wouldn't, because I work with the department and I see it. I know that what you're saying is that there was a covenant on your property, you had to pay back some dollars because there was a covenant in your property. Legally, there was something tying your property, right? So, but that is something.
If you want to talk about that,
but that's something that the law department determines, not
okay,
us.
Okay, but if you want to talk about that, since you brought it up, right?
No.
So you don't want to talk about that. Okay,
out of respect of all the people that came here for the annual action plan and the funding process.
And that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about CDBG dollars. This is the CDBG and home
it
process.
It is.
Right?
But this
and
is not,
dollars
that's not
being
a
recaptured,
funding process.
There are dollars being recaptured from a parallel committee that probably many people don't know about. And we just want to know where those dollars are going. How does it apply to what you passed out here today?
My answer to you is very simple. The money that is recaptured goes back to the community in different programs that the commission
has. And where
can
we see that? That's
well, but it, because it's not a one-to-one thing. It's not like, oh, we recaptured $10 here.
No. Not,
that's why we're
no,
going to.
No, the loan committee, you right. must have an annual, you know, a recapture report and then a reallocation report. That's what I mean.
The way you see it is when these funds, which is called CDBG in this scenario or situation, are given back into other projects. Right? It's not like, oh, I get $2 here, these $2 automatically are going to come to this. No, it doesn't go that way. It's like, okay, we recapture all these dollars. These dollars are available. They're in the city's, let's call it for easier of explanation, bank account with the federal government. And we have to use it, right? We have to use it to provide services to the community. It could be economic development. It could be a housing program. It cannot be public service anymore because that has a cap, a yearly cap. But it's hard to talk with a mask.
I just want to say, is it required that it be sunshine? Is it required that it be transparent? Because if I'm commenting on this annual process, or this amount of money, then my question is, okay, so it may be $4 million, whatever, but we still got $9 million. So if I knew, or everybody here knew, that we still had $9 million, then maybe we would want to be competitive for against those eight, not against, but a little bit better than the other agencies, or find out why such a large portion of monies throughout the last three annual portions of money has been utilized. Why was it recaptured? Why does economic development and housing keep giving money to people that don't use it up? And why all of us out here that need it real bad right now might create a better process if we knew. So I'm confused about the funding amount versus the issue of transparency reporting on CDBG monies and understanding what is the accumulated interest in it as well, because $9 million draw a lot of interest. I need a full funding report If I'm going to make a comment on how to make a process more fair and competitive for people, particularly those of us who are small business owners and those of us who do small projects or those who have contractors that want to do more eco-development can fill that big, open, gaping hole that seems to swallow up about $9 million. Maybe we could be that one applicant that fills it in. I want to know if I've got $9 million, then my question here still remains is, what's going wrong that we're not utilizing it? Because I don't want them to think that we don't want to know that you might give us $3 million this round and then the $9 million. And then also, if it is still CDBG funding as a whole, don't you think it would be more feasible if that amount was included in this list? Because we got a lot more than we think we know, and we got some problems with what we had that we did not know. And I just make that an ask-answer kind of situation for you, because I know when it comes to annual public hearings, we need to know everything so that we make wiser decisions. And unfortunately, whoever made the decisions on whomever about the $9 million, sure ain't telling us what happened wrong then. It probably continue to happen. Wouldn't that be more fair? Don't you think that'd be more fair?
I think it's important to understand how
right.
how we come about to those dollars and why they're called rolled over, right? Maybe that's the beginning. That's where we need to start, right? How is it all these dollars seem to be rolled over, and it seems to be like it just appeared out of there, and nobody told us anything. Well,
nobody told us anything. We had to ask that question.
But
it's not true.
Excuse me.
I don't want to belittle that. I just want to know the law and the policy.
I'm trying to explain to you.
No, this seems like a lot of drama to me, but it's
but
okay.
But I'm trying to explain
it's
to you.
It's okay.
Okay. So then we go
I'm
to
not
the next question.
That.
Next question, please.
May I?
Yes, sir.
In front of me.
Yeah. Robert, Grady Muhammad. Question.
Can you please state your name and address?
Grady Muhammad.
Agency?
President Jay Fernand, Real Estate Leasing, 7017 Northwest 5th Court, Miami, Florida, 33150.
Thank you.
Question and a comment. The question is, economic development, direct assistance to businesses. When have the city given that money, not technical assistance, direct business assistance, because businesses in Liberty City needs assistance. And Overtown, where I left the meeting with the CRA, they have money to give to businesses. Little Haiti, where I live, you have the Little Haiti Trust. They have $6 million currently from the Magic City Innovation District, and the commission is negotiating a community benefit agreement for Eastside Ridge Sable Pond. The question is, what funding through community development has been given to direct business assistance in any of those communities, first and foremost, but directly and specifically the Model City and Liberty City.
Okay, so if part of the presentation, now let me just go back here, is some of the programs that we assisted this past year. As you can see, I don't know, it's hard to see, I know, because the screen is kind of small. But we've provided close to, let's say, close to $4.25 million of assistance in the past year or so. There's different type of business programs that we provided assistance for, and all of this actually is
Listen, business continuity, micro enterprise fund.
Yeah.
The CDBG.
Right.
That's $400,000. The other one is from Miami-Dade County. City of Miami and Miami-Dade County has two separate entities. They're two separate funding. So we're talking City of Miami. We're not talking Miami-Dade County. The other one is ARAP fund. So those are the American Recovery funds. Those are additional funds from the CARES Act. The Small Business Emergency Loan Program was $245,000. And the small business, again, is 580. But reason why I asked that, because, again, the direct assistance, we give a lot of money for technical assistance. But I'm talking specifically businesses. And because one of the problems I had with community development, where we allow Jungle Island, Para Jungle, they forgave over $2 million, over $2.5-3 million of a Section 108 loan. The commission did, but community development allowed them to do it. But the jobs that everybody else has to create was never there, because the loan should have never been given, because that's prime City of Miami waterfront property. And the City of Miami Commission allowed them to say, we're going to forgive that Section 108 loan because we're going to get some additional rent. But one thing has absolutely nothing to do, because this loan was given in 1997. That $25 million original Section 108 loan was given in 1997. And it has changed hands of ownership over three times. And the City and Community Development, Housing Community Economic Development, has never sought to ensure the payment, the repayment of that, because when those funds get lost, poor people suffer. And so, again, when I'm speaking direct business assistance to small businesses, there's been no business assistance program. The last time I remember was when air conditioners and people had their business and the ACs got stolen. The city gave them $10,000. That was almost 10 years ago. So we had some loans and some small businesses, because that's what I would like, that my comment now would be to advocate for a direct small business grant program, not a loan, because small businesses coming out of this pestilence from heaven and this COVID-19, they can't afford a loan. Their credit is bad and everything else. So trying to give them a loan that they can't repay does not make any sense at all. That's why it's called community development block grant funds. The funds are a grant. So we shouldn't loan these out to small businesses who are already struggling. So my comment would be, are we going to create, because Elaine Black is here, and her job is to help residents in Liberty City. She doesn't get community development block grant funding. And therefore, she can't help small businesses, like a Shrimp Wings and things, and many other businesses in Liberty City that need help. So my question is the city, because likewise, it goes through commissioners, but the money is not commission allocated, but now community development has been given the funds directly to the commissioners to allocate. And it shouldn't be commission-based allocation. It's community development block grant funds. And since we are the public citizen participation, we should be requesting what we need, not giving the money to the commissioner and she allocate or he allocates it based on what they need. That's why we have citizens participation, 570.204 on the federal statute. So my question again is, based on my comment, are we going to create a program through community development to assist small businesses citywide, but specifically Model City, Liberty City, to assist them with a grant program, not a loan program? That's my question.
Right. Well,
I just brought this up because these are all programs that just actually cater to what you just said. This was all of these.
No, we're talking going forward now.
There's an explanation for everything, right? We got to get there. Because you were saying that we didn't have, but we had actually. We served 254 businesses. It's actually that went money to businesses, business owners. It didn't go to any agency for technical assistance. It went directly to businesses. Now, obviously, these are different programs and they have different requirements, but they did go. And they did. We also had $1 million from micro business enterprises, which is what you refer to, right? Grants,
yes.
Right? Because anything and everything that we do, we have to follow what the federal government says.
Of course.
And the federal government says, the only way for you to give money to a business that has more than 5 employees is by them creating a job. There's absolutely nothing I can do, right? Because otherwise I cannot use the money. It's very simple. So we did create those programs that unfortunately, even to our standards, we don't like that program because it forces a struggling business owner, specifically because of the pandemic, to actually have to retain a job. And we don't agree with that idea. But there's nothing I can do, whether I agree or not, right? And we also had the microenterprise program, which is to provide assistance to businesses that are 5 employees or less, where the owner is a low-income person who's also an employee of the company.
That's what I'm specifically speaking
right.
about, not 5
We had the program.
Only 4
people applied.
Maybe the rules
question.
And that
what then?
Okay, my brother.
Let me finish, sir. This is in reference to the same thing. What was the process that community development?
It was open.
You're saying open. My question, what was the outreach to the businesses or what advertisement that you did to ensure that people was aware of these programs existed so more than four businesses can be applied? That's my question.
Okay. Go ahead. So what we did is, in previous years, we have had...
Not previous years, sir.
But this, I have to explain to you...
No, you keep going back in previous years. I'm speaking specifically to that program where only four people applied.
Okay, let me say this. In previous years, we didn't have enough money for all the businesses that applied. So we had a list of businesses. So I have to go back to previous years so you understand this.
Okay.
So we did a direct outreach to those businesses that had previously applied, did not get the funding, and they were given the opportunity to apply. It was put out in the city of Miami, Instagram, it was advertised in the newspaper. So it was, the outreach was done. Whether the business applied or not, or business applied did not qualify, there's nothing I can do for it.
You understood, but remember, we had a pestilence from heaven called coronavirus. It wiped out many businesses in the city of Miami, in the country. So that's one of the potential reasons why those businesses didn't apply, because a lot of those businesses got put out of business.
No disagreeing with you.
Can I make a recommendation, though, in the interest of in closing of this? Because it does...
Very quickly, because there's other people...
You're alluding to the fact. No, I'm just trying to think of what has worked and what the policy says you can do. So if I'm putting things out, you've met the transparency part. But my comment and recommendation would be my last one. Where, oh, if you allow it, and tell me, is it feasible or is it possible or is it required for you all to hear the recommendation to fix that problem? If I'm putting out that money and saying, come on and get it, during a time that the city is very aware that we have COVID and all the other issues, how do we change the rules of engagement? Because I've seen those applications. Most of us within this city limit and these boundaries already automatically don't meet it. I believe that when with the 108 loan had the technical assistance to do it, then my second question is, wouldn't it be feasible and more readily available if we checked out who's providing the direct technical assistance to these businesses so that they could be more competitive? And I want to see who in the last several years have gotten technical assistance monies, because then we could track whether or not the application may not be reasonable at all. And I know you want to make the most reasonable opportunity, like the policy says, about poverty dollars, even when they say non-competitively. We thought the city thought it best to give it to the commissioners, or the city thought it best to allow them to pick the people. What makes the people that they pick more successful? What makes them more competitive? What makes them more technically appreciated? Are they local, which is also a requirement? See, that's what I'd like to see in the capers this year, because I want to fix the problems about us access. We have brilliant people in here, wonderful, experienced people in here. Some of them might be better than the, what was that, Jungle Island? Jungle Boogie? Whatever that was. That's what I want. I want to know how we can be as competitive as Jungle Boogie and Jungle Island and the commissioner nominated organizations, because to my understanding, the most reasonable opportunity available has not yet been done. Just simply putting it out there and inviting people. Listen, we can invite people to have a cup of coffee and be here. We invited people to be here. But I'm wondering, what is the recommended changes any of these businesses will have? What difficulties have been established that I haven't seen identified in the capers, so that we can make more specific accessibility, more fair opportunity? Because some of us applied many years, we wanted to, but it's something about the rules. Like, Master, is it still required that you have 25% from the county in order to get the city monies as well? Is that rule still applied? I heard it once, but then nobody like me anyway. They'll find anything to tell me.
Never
I can't
heard
get no
that
cash.
Rule.
I mean, we can't get no cash. But that was my question. Is the 20 out of that, when we apply for CDBG monies, are we still required to get it from the county? Because at one time, that was a whole rule.
I don't know. I've been here 23 years. I never.
Yeah, I know. And it doesn't make sense to me either. I've never seen it really applied at all. And my 40-some years of trying to do
it. I can only answer what I know, but I definitely don't know.
No, I just want you to answer what you know, and I want you to answer something according to the facts of what's possibility and what's feasible. They also mentioned that word part, what's feasible during the use of it. And that's all I'm saying. My question is, or my recommendation is, look at the rules and look at the cities that put out CDBG monies. Their application process is nothing like this one. And even when they recapture it, they recapture it and try to give it to organizations that may have missed a few things but have direct impact on the people that they serve. And that's my recommendation. Would you take that in hand? I'm going to write it for you, too.
It's being recorded.
Yes. So that's really what I want to see you get out
that's
of it.
Right.
What will bridge the gap between those of us that have, that live, that pay the taxes, that now go to commissioners who already use tax money and do what they want to do with it, then to make it more competitive and more available for smaller organizations like us who live in the community and who are, some of us are really qualified for some of the funding, that services that we use to administrate and provide. So I want to really know, is economic development, is that process, are those questions, is that application realistically supporting the success of these applications? Or is that a way to just say, we recaptured, we'll tell you later on we recaptured, thank God you're smart, we do auditing, or do we really need to audit the process itself to make sure that it's fair to the bidding? Because we can't just be that dumb and that dumb, you can't believe we don't want that cash, we're here now. So I just want you to take a recommendation. On the record, commissioners, no problem, I know you're going to listen to this, but what can you change to make sure that you don't have to find other groups, and tell me what it is these other groups have that we don't have. Thank you very much for your patience. Thank you.
Anybody else have? Yes?
Yes.
Your name, your address, and your
agency. Courtney Gillens, City of Miami resident at 25 Northeast 5th Street. And
Courtney
Gillens. But I work with the county, and I would say I have 2 points. So with regard to what the last point about the micro enterprise loans, I slightly disagree that the process hasn't been, the community outreach hasn't been there, because I've gone over to the Overtown CRA and I've sat in a meeting where they provide technical assistance, explain the whole process, and successful applicants, also in attendance, will tell you I run a lawn care company, I applied for this loan, and they help you with whatever the requirements are, and it becomes a forgiven loan once you meet all the requirements, which makes it a grant. So that was maybe 5 years ago, though, prior to the pandemic, so I don't know what's been happening since, but I do also agree with the other point of CDBG funds. Having worked in a capacity at a nonprofit and also at the county in two different departments, managing CDBG funds from the county level, the transparency, I think, is always there, but we do need a comprehensive report. Like me, even as a grant manager of CDBG funds, I've known that the commissioners can allocate the money to where it needs to go, or wherever they choose, or whatever their priority list is. I know there are commissioners who hold on to money for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. You always got to tap them and say, hey, you got $400,000. We need to figure out, can we go support the park over here or what? But I don't think I've seen a comprehensive report of what happens to reallocated dollars. I've only seen, specific to my programs that I've managed, which happened to be home and ESG over at the Lotus House years ago, I've seen where the HUD office from the county has reallocated, say, the unused $100,000 and rolled it into something else by a county resolution. But, we just never can tie up the numbers and, figure out where all the money is. I just know, specifically because I happen to work at that place and manage those funds, and I knew I'm the person giving the projections of what we might not spend, and, I'm the person in the office doing the process. So I think my recommendation would be for some kind of comprehensive report, some high-level report that kind of ties everything together, because we can look at every county resolution and see, these are reallocated funds that this commission is allocating over here, but we don't know where it came from, where it originated, what program it came from, what new program it's going to. So I feel like that's definitely missing. And that's what I see on the county and the city.
Yeah.
Very well. Thank
you.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Hello, my name is Faye Cochran, and I live at 615 Harold Avenue, Ogallala, but I work at Curly Tops.
Yes.
625 of the Sixth Court. And we have been in the community for over 20 years, providing food and other services to our community, and I'm looking at the fact that rent is sky high. Mm-hmm. And their fuel costs are sky high. Mm-hmm. A lot of businesses have shut down. There's just inflation. And so it's becoming more and more difficult for people to keep food on their tables. And we just want to make sure that our citizens are considered and that their money allocated to the city, CDBG, so that we'll be funding to continue to help feed our needy families.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
The important thing there is that you got to fill a bird to apply. Right? The RFP, because applications are critical, right? Tell Laverne to go ahead, and this January or February is going to be our RFP process, and they have to apply. Okay?
Yes. I'm the one who really helped do that.
Yeah, she's helping right now.
Laverne's here.
Hey, everybody. I'm Laverne Spicer from Curly's House. Y'all already know what we do. If you don't, we feed people. We've been doing it over 20 years, helping people with food, clothing, shelter, whatever their needs are. That's what we do. We help in the system. We don't play the zip code game. We don't care what zip code you're from. If you come to us and you need help, that's what we do without taking people through the red tape. We make them simplify the process because we realize a lot of people are hurting. Gas is up. You know, food is up. People can't afford to eat. They don't have baby formula for the babies right now. So we're in a crisis mode in our community. So that's why it's so important, like, for organizations like ourselves to be able to maintain and continue what we're doing. And, of course, with your help, Robert, and the city of Miami, we need y'all to help us because we need additional funds to be able to keep feeding those seniors in our community that need the help the most. And one thing about Curly's House, even though we're not funded to provide hot meals, we still give them hot meals each and every day. We have a large population of homeless people that live across the street. So we make sure that they're able to eat, especially during the weekend when things are closed. You know, the money is short. They don't have money to buy stuff. So we make sure they get food, toiletries, and other things that they need. And for our senior community, we make sure that those people receive fresh vegetables, not black, moldy, beat down, stuff like that. We get them fresh vegetables that they cannot afford to buy out of the grocery store. We also educate them. We show them how to cook that food. We teach them about different food. We also bring different doctors in where we have workshops to talk to them about their medications and what medications they may can take with certain drinks and juices and food and all that type of stuff. So we have a very great relationship with them, you know, and we like to make sure that they understand that we are here to show them love and support them and keep them in the mainstream of life and make sure that they know that somebody care about them. So that's what we do.
You have a wonderful program, let me tell you.
Thank you.
Can you please state again your name and the address of your agency? The recording didn't capture your name, so your name.
Oh, Laverne Spicer, 6025 Northwest 6th Court, Miami, Florida.
Thank you. That's Curly's House.
Yeah, that's Curly's House.
Okay, great. Anybody else has a comment? Yes, sir.
And Santander Arguelles from Alapatas, you can see.
Alexander Arguelles?
Santander Arguelles. Yeah, from Alapatas,
CC1,
Northwest 7th Avenue, Miami, Florida, 33136. So first, I think it's supporting the community and also providing technical assistance. We do have also to communicate to all the small business in the area, because we have had businesses that have been in the running the business for 15, 20 years, and this year alone is the first time that they find out about mom and pop. So I understand the city is not being hidden about mom and pop, we all know about it, but then our neighbors or business owners don't know about it. And we have like 20 businesses that apply for, like half of them gathered, so been to District 3 and District 5 and District 2. So they all, you know, been getting it, but we also have to cascade that information. I know sometimes it's like a few applications, but we also can do more as well, informing the small business owners. And in regard to that, is there a plan for more funds for those programs that you had before, like the Rise Miami or the small business grants?
Well, we didn't have, Rise Miami wasn't coming from our department itself. However, like I discussed earlier, when you're talking about economic development programs, you have more flexibility because there's probably like 60% or 70% of CDBG dollars that can be utilized for that type of activity, unlike, you know, the public services, which are restricted to 15%. But it's a matter of you know, applying for the program, which again is going to be in January or February of next year, and then you know, it's
scoring the minimum points so they could be considered for recommendation. Yes.
Yes, sir. Excuse me. I'd like to be the voice for the consumers that I serve. I serve them just as proudly and with passion, just like
name
you.
Name agency.
I will.
Thank you.
I will. Don't push me. No, I'm kidding. Elena Del Monte, Association for the Development of the Exceptional, better known in the community as ADE. Our location is 51 Northeast 79th Street. I am also a City of Miami resident myself. So double voice, we have been providing services for adults with autism and developmental disabilities for 40 some years. I have been with the organization for 42 years, and we have received CDBG dollars both at the City of Miami and at the metro level for, I can't remember how long, 30 some years. First of all, thank you, and thank you, Mr. Mayor, and all the commissioners for making the needs of adults with developmental disabilities a priority. This type of population, they were not asked to be born like this. They are born as children, and they will die as children. And it seems like individuals like myself that service them, we continue to have to show our faces, knock at the door. But unfortunately, these are people that will need services for as many days they are on earth. So that's why we continue. We have three centers. We serve without even thinking of color. So there used to be years that we used to have to say how many Hispanics, how many, you know, how many African Americans, how many. I no longer do it because we are a human race and what we do is above and beyond all that. Is really God's work. I have the best staff on earth, and if you know of any consumer, our consumer basically imagine that 21, 22 years old young man or young woman that graduates from high school and that has a mental retardation or a Down syndrome or a cerebral palsy or an autism. And all of a sudden, they graduate and they fall in a limbo. So that's what ADE does. We open our doors and we give them a full curriculum of life skills and vocational skills, of course, depending on the level of functioning that they have. If they are high functioning and they can integrate truly in society, then we prepare them for supported employment, teaching them employability skills, and we employ them in the community. That's us. Now, talking about funding, I already told you, or you can guess how old I am, and for how many years I always go to podium, and I always say, we need to fight for more funding. And we now have, right, my friend? And now we are at a crossroad where Miami is being sold to the world and to the nation as a Mecca. Right now, beyond the fact of the inflation in Miami, double up the formula of inflation. It is getting so impossible to live in Miami. So what happens as the pockets of, you know, the privilege continue to grow, the pockets of the real poverty that we have shrink but are there. And unfortunately, the formula that is used sometimes in CDBG shrinks just because of that. We are right now showing as a prosperous area, but what do we do about these, you know, about the all the human beings that we're all trying to serve? And I don't have the answer to that. I don't know, you don't have the answer to that. But, you know, what can we do? I mean, we try to get a 25%. Remember, we tried to get, but still trying to get the 25% versus the 15 may help public service, but then it affects the other, you know, the housing and the this and the that.
Right, but we always have the idea that, you know, we always wanted to allocate additional dollars for public services. We've always supported that idea. I think we're one of the few cities across the country that actually went to Congress, sold the idea, talked to HUD.
Yes.
But they never actually wanted
they
it.
Never.
They never. You know, it goes beyond, you know, much forces that are much, much deeper, you know, than what we are able to accomplish. So they never wanted to do it. And I really highly believe that even our elected officials in the, you know, at the national
level. Have given
level,
up in a way.
They just
yeah,
simply.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
Well, we got Marcia Fudge and HUD. We got the Democratic administration. We got Democratic senators. We voted for them. Now we got to go ahead and make sure they do the right
but,
thing.
But that's something for us as individuals to do. It's impossible. To
collectively, do. We got to do it collectively.
And, you know, but it's a problem that's only going to grow worse as Miami continues to grow.
That's why we got to elect Laverne Spicer to Congress.
Well, thank you, Elena.
No, thank you. Thank all of you, all of the department, because you know, we're all in this together.
Anybody else?
Hi, my name is Elaine Black, 4800 Northwest 12th Avenue, Liberty City Trust. We're here, we've reviewed your documents, and we see your priorities. Our priorities are, number one, affordable housing. Many of the homes in our community need to be upgraded. Many of the houses are over 50 years old and have received hurricane damage and need to be repaired so as to be maintained, to maintain our housing stock. And I must say, the city has put dollars into those programs. We need to continue to put dollars into those programs. We need to ask it from the city, the state, the federal government. And that is about rehabilitating our existing homes. What we're finding out is this. Many people are moving into our neighborhoods that are not low income. They aren't even people who want to gentrify. They are people who want to find some place decent to live that they no longer can live because the average is the average apartment building. Used to cost maybe $2,000. Now they want $3,600. So people are now saying, oh, I can't even afford to live in my middle class neighborhood anymore. Because that no one, very, very few people can afford a $1,300, $1,500 increase monthly in their rents. So what is happening is they're coming in and buying out our properties because they are reasonably priced. In addition, as we have gone about developing affordable rental units, which are wonderful, the people in our community used to be the first opportunity to buy them. I'm sorry, to rent them. But now, you have a renter coming in that is making at the top of the 80% level, who has a good job, who does all the right things, and then we have a resident. A little lower on the 80% level, maybe 70, maybe 75%, don't have the money, older, they're not the best, they're not the candidate for that rental unit. If you have those two choices, you're going to go with the one who has the best money. So, we are losing our rental units that we normally had in our community because individuals who normally would rent those houses can no longer find them. We put out our list, and I would say 95% of people on that list, you call them up, either you can't get an answer, or if you get an answer, no, we don't have any rooms. I don't know how we need to address that. And it's not about a money issue. It's about a change in policy issue. And I don't want to say what that change in policy needs to be. But if we want to keep working people in our community, we're going to have to change some policies so that they can afford, they can continue to afford to live in the community. But more than that, we can need to do it so that there is some place for anyone to live in our community that is not very high income. We always thought it would be about gentrification, people moving in because, I just want to go into the coolest place possible. Oh, these properties are low value, and I want to be in a low-income neighborhood and then build it up and flip that property. It's not like that anymore. All of a sudden, no one can afford to live
here. Supply and demand is horrible.
Right. You know, the people who come here to South Florida that have money are people who are billionaires elsewhere. Not millionaires, billionaires. And therefore, they come in and buy everything cash. No one, who can afford to compete against that? We may have to come up with laws. There will be no cash buyers. You must have lived in the city of Miami for at least 2 years. You must do this. You must do that. In order for us to keep local residents that have money in our community. Because otherwise, it will cost all of us out of existence. So, just want to talk about rental properties. Want to talk about rehabbing older properties. And definitely down payment assistance for new property owners. We need to encourage our young people to stay. We need to encourage our middle income people to stay. They need to buy properties in our community. And I understand very clearly we're going to have to address the issue of insurance. Insurances are getting too high. We're going to have to address the issues of taxes so that maybe what will happen is if you are a resident really living in that property, your taxes are one thing. If you are an owner from another country, another state, your taxes are something else. So
but that's going to be very difficult because of discrimination.
Oh, I understand that.
It's
we're going to have to.
It's a mess. We're in a mess.
We're
There's no other way
something.
Word to explain
no
it.
We're going to have to do something so that local people can have some place to live. And that includes everybody here who has a job at the county, the city, the state, because our school teachers won't be able to afford to live here. Our police people, our fire people, we are going to have major challenges. Now I want to talk a little bit about the businesses. The facade program and other, and I understand very clearly, we had some great programs during COVID. Some people were able to take advantage of them, some weren't. But in order for us to maintain some businesses here that are owned by residents, we are going to have some loan programs that are geared for them to assist them. We're going to have some facade programs that help them keep the exterior of their buildings looking nice. And we may even have some programs that address the code violations. And I know that's very difficult because when you say I have an electrical code violation, that could be from $1 to $1 million. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Not a million, but the point is it's high cost. Mm-hmm. So
that's
on behalf of the Liberty City
point.
Trust.
We have it.
We used to have it. The violation, because that can kill your CO and everything.
On behalf of the Liberty City Trust, we're submitting our list of our concerns. We've been over your list, and we feel that these are our list of our major concerns for the use of community development block grant dollars for 2022-23.
Thank
you.
We'll include this in our document.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Anybody else has a comment, question?
But we understand you have a huge waiting list of, people just waiting. So
needs is to be homeless. You know, we have all these rapid programs that will rapidly link you to care and to get your meds, but they don't have an address where the meds can even go. And, you know, so there are a lot of housing unsure people. And, you know, my district is pretty high, running kind of neck and neck with the other counties, Broward and Palm Beach. We're all up there. We're all working cohesively together to try to end the epidemic, which is endable if we get everyone to a virally suppressed load. But that requires medication, it requires education, it requires all the social determinants of health, which includes housing stability. So we are, I'm already talking with you guys and sitting in my housing committee meetings, but we just wanted to be here, to be present, to kind of see what the community needs are around HIV and AIDS, and to let you know that the county is, you know, we are trying to develop something to maybe assist and possibly buy into some of that wait list you have, possibly provide some kind of financial literacy program or some kind of job assistance or something. So we'll be getting together and just trying to develop something.
Right.
Do you have something like that in the city?
I am part of that board. I'm a permanent member of the HIV AIDS Partnership Board. Yes.
So my name is Sandra Garcia. I'm with CARPOR. The reason why we came is because of HOPWA. We also provide permanent housing to individuals that were homeless. But we have the component of HOPWA, and they have to go through a lengthy process in order to get housing. So we just want to like bring it up to you guys. Like, we have the housing. We just need that rental assistance component, which doesn't, like what Courtney was saying, they don't have to be on the streets while waiting for medication. Then we're not doing them any favor. In reality, all of us are struggling with housing right now. So imagine if on top of that you have AIDS. And so we just want to be part of this meeting.
That's great. I mean, as a matter of fact, two of your villages, we fund Harding Village and we fund Little River Bend.
Correct.
So, you know, we provide a project-based assistance. It's not really rental assistance, because the assistance is always stayed with the operation of the building. You know, we always try to see, I mean, like if you have other projects where you are reserving units for specific, you know, eligible population, you know, apply on the next RFP for those buildings as well, because certainly we know that, you know, we get a higher amount of people housed in lower cost in those buildings. So that's certainly something that we're interested in. Yes.
My name's Vivian Yvonne Perkins. I'm from the Charles Hadley Neighborhood Association. And Charles Hadley Neighborhood Association, we've reviewed most of the programs that you have in the past, and we want the following to be looked at, attended to, helped with. And that's affordable housing. As we walk the neighborhood, and we are a neighborhood organization, we are a nonprofit, and we see the needs of the people. And as we go about the needs of the people, looking and living near a park where the homeless try to come and live. And it's one of the largest area parks. And watching the homeless come and get thrown away from there and wonder what happens with them there. For at least 50 years, we watched the hurricane damage of the homes, including mine. And the home that I live in was built in 1932. Can you imagine? But my mom keeps it up to standards the best she can. And with the family, so it's a family home, so it doesn't have as many problems. But when it comes to affordable housing, my children can't live here. They just cannot live here. They live elsewhere, where most of our children are going to. Because it's to the point that big executives have not maintained the rentals. The area is being bought out by big businesses, and the small people and the homeless people are just everywhere. And if the community and the people don't see this as a way to get monies and grants, we're doomed. We're doomed in the way that nobody's going to be comfortable anywhere in town, because they're going to be overflowed with people that can't get affordable housing, people that can't get housing at all. So I would like to submit, because it's not going to help with the 80% and all that with the income. It's just not matter. It doesn't matter. What matters most is that the people in charge of these grants need to let the money go so it can go to the people that really need it and can use it. It's just a waste to watch millionaires get richer on the poor. So I would like to submit from the Charles Hadley Neighborhood Association a form for affordable housing and
rehabilitation.
Great. Thank you very much for your comments and your input. Anybody else here wishes to provide comment? Yes.
I'm Maria Cecilia Oduber from Care Resource. Thank you for assist and support our program. It is for the people with East HIV. We have resort to assist the people for rent and mortgage and utility. I need that you visit our building. We are excellent, provide different resources for the community too, okay? Health assistant, dental assistant, pediatrician.
And this is for people with HIV/AIDS, right?
Yes, and for the community.
For community
too.
For everybody. Okay, that's great.
The city of Miami assists us for the OPA program for rent, for mortgage, and utility.
But that's for people with HIV. Our assistance is for people with HIV.
Please, I need that you come to my office, come to my building.
You
need
every,
we are for you.
Client that doesn't have any place to live, don't have any place to live. You can help them get some place to live.
Okay.
But our program is for people with HIV.
Yeah,
I just want to make sure that people know.
The ones
that we fund is for people that have HIV.
It's housing case management.
And we have a little resort for the community.
For other
too.
People?
Yeah,
okay,
for other people.
So.
But you know, so you say you don't want me sending my folks over there.
No, but they say that they have other resources as
it's
well.
It's very important, this resort, right?
Okay.
Right,
yes.
But.
They're also one of our ending the HIV
family. All right. We don't quite get it. So if I have a family that's been put out of their apartment building in Liberty City, a family of four people, I can just send them to you and you can help them. We can help for the security deposit at the first month where the people look for the rent. I don't look property. I assist for security deposit on first month.
Gotcha.
And if they're
security deposit at first month.
Yes, and
it's similar to what the county does.
Miami County.
Yeah.
Or
are you part of Miami-Dade County CAA?
Yes.
Is she a part of Miami-Dade County CAA? Or is it separate from Miami-Dade County?
Oh,
I can only tell you from what I provide. Look, at the end of the day, you have somebody, a family, who is completely homeless. You have to call a homeless trust. We provide dollars for motel vouchers for people with families. If you don't have families or little kids, then they'll have to wait for a shelter space or probably don't want to go to a shelter. But if they have kids, they go to a hotel.
And then, you know, I have a person. You have a personal relationship with David Roseman. You know, but, we have.
Yeah. I mean, but we give them a lot of money for that. I mean, actually, as a matter of fact, we paid up. This last year, we gave over more than $1.5 million for motel vouchers.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was crazy. It was that kind of situation. And you know, while we're on that topic, what are we going to do if people are being put out of their houses now? Because they're being put out, number one, not because they did not pay their rent, because their rent has gone up too high for them to afford it.
Rent control. We need to devote it to rent control.
It's something that needs to be addressed, but it's beyond what we can do with,
Not with CDBG, but within community development, should there be like a planning stage now? Because, you know, I've lived in Miami, I came from Cuba in 1961. I've never seen what is happening now.
That's a whole state issue. It's not just...
Yeah, but in Miami, it's
really
like...
bad, right. But
yeah, multiply it times a million.
Well, if anybody, if nobody has any other questions or comments, well, thank you very much for attending.
Thank you, Robert.
This meeting is therefore adjourned. Thank you.
We turned it into a thing for you. And we're